This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
When a scientist starts talking about abrupt ecosystem change, as the title of a new paper does, that really gets my attention. This time it's the ocean, and specifically the North Pacific Ocean, which borders some of the most heavily populated places on Earth. The title is Slowing Down of the North Pacific Climate Variability and Its Implications for Abrupt Ecosystem Change, from the College of Life and Environmental Sciences at the University of Exeter in the UK. We've reached the lead author, Dr. Chris A. Bolton. Chris Bolton, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Oh, well, thank you for having me.
We'll have to talk about some science that may be new to listeners, but before we begin, will the changes happening in the ocean really affect human lives?
Well, yeah, I think so. I think one of the main things that we're going to experience and everyone will see quite clearly is a rise in sea level with climate change, and obviously that's going to affect lots of people that live on the coast. They'll lose their homes and things. We'll lose beaches, and obviously that's going to affect local economies as well. But also things that we might not see or notice as well is that the warmer oceans will tend to have a different interaction with the atmosphere above it, and that's going to change weather patterns as well. I think some people have noticed that we're starting to see less cyclones, but that they're going to be more intense. And then also there's other things such as current changes, so changes in the ocean currents. That's probably going to take a bit longer to notice, but again, that's going to change weather patterns even more. So there's lots of things going on that are going to affect people.
So what drove you and your colleague Tim Lenton to do this research?
So we work on studying what are called climate tipping points. So these are these large, drastic, sudden changes that we see in climate systems, and we try to predict them. We try to think of techniques that will give people some early warning that we're approaching them. And if we want to look for these in the real world, then we need real world data, and sea surface temperatures are some of the longest monitored time series that we have out there. So it's a natural place to look for these sort of signals. And we were just sort of exploring, and we came across quite a strong signal that's similar to these slowing down signals that happened in the North Pacific. And also looking at something called the PDO index, which I expect we'll get onto in a minute, that also showed the same signal. So.
Right. So what is the Pacific Decadal Oscillation that you've just referred to?
Right. So the Pacific Decadal Oscillation, or the PDO index, as we call it, is a mode of climate variability. And that basically tells us how the ocean's varying over time on like a grid point by grid point scale. So if we look at all the temperatures in the ocean at different points, we can see that over the last century, it's generally been warming. And we also know there's some annual cycle in there, so it's going to be colder in winter, warmer in summer. But then if we want to then know what the what's causing the variability in the ocean, we get to what's called the PDO index. And that's basically a playoff between the ocean temperatures that are on the west coast of the Pacific Ocean and moving towards the center, so like a blob that goes from Japan to the center. And then also like a horseshoe shape that goes around the north and down the west coast of America. And that basically, this horseshoe shape will be warmer than the blob in some cases, in some years, and in other years that will switch over. And that gives us our oscillation. So it's just like a description of what the ocean's doing once we take out the general warming trend and we account for the fact that we have some annual variability in that.
Is it true this ocean pattern was discovered in part due to observations made about salmon runs?
Yeah, so Stephen Hare from Washington, I think in the late 90s, was looking at how salmon productivity or salmon catches were affected by climate change. And when he looked in all the ocean temperatures, he made some connection between this PDO index that he discovered and the catches of salmon in different areas. So, yeah, there's a connection there.
Now, what I find a little harder to understand is, what is the relationship or difference between this Pacific Decadal Oscillation we've been talking about and ENSO, the better-known cycle that brings us an El Niño or La Niña?
Yeah, sure. So you could say that the Pacific Decadal Oscillation is like the ENSO's northern cousin, I suppose. So there's a bit of an extension of them. They kind of play off each other, but I guess the Pacific Decadal Oscillation works on longer time scales, so it will be like, say, 20 or 30 years in one state before it switches over, whereas the ENSO oscillations tend to work on much smaller time scales, but that they can amplify each other's effects, basically. So if the PDO is in a certain phase when ENSO is, then you'll see some amplification as there's a bit of an overlap, and likewise, their effects will be dampened if they're in different phases.
Reading over your paper, I find that scientists use the term redder in the context of this study to mean something different than just the color. What do you mean by that?
Sure. So I like to use an analogy of a ball in a well or a valley. So basically, if your ball's stuck in like a really narrow valley and you pushed it around, it would quickly roll back to the bottom again. And that's something that we'd call white noise. So that's a bit like the static you'd get on a television, for example. But when something's getting redder, it's basically saying that this valley is shallowing and getting wider. And so then when the ball gets pushed, it tends to move slower and it will take longer to recover back to the middle. So I guess it's a bit like someone talking really deeply on a sound wave, and you start to see like a long drawn out wave as opposed to like this sort of high frequency noise that you might expect when you're recording something, some static off a television, for example. So it's kind of like a change in that wavelength, I suppose you could call it.
All right. Now, you do talk about higher amplitude but lower frequency events. Are you saying the North Pacific may change less often, but when it does, it may change radically?
Yeah. So if you look at this PDO index, for example, we've seen the changes in 1977 and 89, but we haven't noticed those so much towards the early century. And so that's kind of showing you that as you go over time, you're starting to see these more pronounced events that have happened, and they seem to be more abrupt as well. So, yeah, as we're having this more redder system, you start to see more extreme changes that you might not have noticed before, because you have this more white static sort of noise rather than the person talking deep into the microphone, I guess.
What did happen in 1977 and 1989 that was so noticeable?
So going back to Stephen Hare's research, I guess she's seen that the salmon productivity in different areas changed. So in Alaska, for example, I apologize, I can't remember which way around they go exactly, but in Alaska you might have seen salmon catches quite high there, and then when it got to 1977, they might have all disappeared, but you might have got more salmon found like further down the west coast, for example, and that was due to this change in the PDO index. So as I said earlier, we had this blob and horseshoe sort of pattern. So before 1977, for example, the horseshoe would have been cooler than the blob in the middle, but then they would have changed over, so you would have had a warmer horseshoe compared to the blob, and then in 1989 that they would have changed back again. So you get a change in the sign of the PDO index, I guess.
Chris Bolton, what do scientists expect will happen to ocean mixing as the Earth warms?
These sort of ocean mixing things, I think, are quite poorly modelled, but I think the general idea is that as you warm the ocean temperatures, you start to see less mixing, and particularly between the top layer of the ocean and what's happening underneath.
Well, Dr. James Lovelock warned that the oceans could become stratified with climate change, with less oxygen mixing in and possibly more dead zones developing. Do you believe that will happen with global warming, and what time frame would we be talking about?
Sure. So I think most of the drivers of dead zones happen from chemical runoff from cities, and they get into the ocean and cause these dead zones. But I think that warming temperatures also amplify that effect. And so what happens is that you see more stratification, so there's less mixing between the top layer of the ocean and what happens underneath. And so what happens is the oxygen doesn't get to what's happening below, and so everything kind of gets sealed off and suffocates, I guess. But there's also the problem that warmer water holds less oxygen anyway, so you're having like a double effect there. So
that's interesting. So if the mixed layer depth decreases, How will that affect the general reduction of the ocean variability that we've seen in the last century?
This is a bit of a tough question for me. So if the mixed layer depth decreases, that potentially reverses the signal that we found of this less variability. That's an interesting thing that we need to look into a bit more. So it firstly depends on how much the mixed layer depth is actually driving this variability that we've seen. And we think that the mixed layer depth explains our signal in part, but not fully. So that needs a bit more research in the context of our study.
This is Radio EcoShock. I'm Alex Smith with my guest, Dr. Chris Bolton from the University of Exeter in England. We're talking about surprises in the way oceans work. Chris, your work is part of a large body of scientific research coming out lately that suggests large-scale and relatively rapid environmental changes are not only possible, but more likely as we continue to destabilize the climate. What could you envision happening in the North Pacific Ocean, and how quickly could it occur?
So I guess this is talking about the tipping points that we study. When we found the signal in the North Pacific, we were wondering whether we were actually seeing an approach towards a tipping point. But we couldn't actually see any evidence of like true tipping point behavior, as people generally think of what tipping points are. So we think that the system, like the PDO index, for example, if the signals we see are going to continue, then we'll start to see more rapid and stronger like changes between like these salmon productivity regimes, for example. But then they might change again afterwards. So I don't think you'll see anything drastic that can't be reversed, and it will eventually just switch back in between the two, but they'll become a lot more drastic than they have been over the last century.
Well, I want to get back to that tipping point idea, but first I've got a couple of general questions that may be in the minds of my listeners. For example, in 2015, we've seen an unusual blob, as they've called it, of hot water parked off the Pacific coast of North America. A very scientific term, blob.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, definitely a scientist. Made that up.
Well, it's affected the weather in the western states and Canada, possibly adding to the big drought here. Do you know, does anybody know why it's there?
So I had to look up a bit about North Pacific things recently, and I saw this blob, and it appears to be near the horseshoe shape that I was talking about earlier. So that's interesting because it might fit in with this PDO index and show that it's in like the stronger warming phase than it has been before. I don't exactly know why it's here. I might put it down to sort of natural variability. So, you know, it might just be, oh, it's raining today, for example, but on a much larger time scale. But I think it does kind of highlight the importance that these sort of regimes have. So the fact that the ocean temperatures do have such an effect on the, like, the droughts that you see. So it's important to study these sort of things.
So in contrast to what's happening in the North Pacific, NASA says Greenland ice is melting faster than previously thought and may have created a cold blob, if we want to call it that, of water in the North Atlantic. There's far less ice to melt in the North Pacific. I wonder whether the Pacific will warm faster than the Atlantic just because of that factor.
That's certainly an idea. And the fact that we're seeing the cold blob of water in the North Atlantic could tell you that on the short time scale, you might see faster warming in the Pacific. But the interesting thing about the Greenland ice sheet melting is that people worry that this will actually create a tipping point of something called Atlantic meridional overturning circulation collapse. And that will cause a huge reduction in temperature over the North Atlantic. Some people even suggest that it could cool North Europe up to 10 degrees, but, I mean, that's very drastic, and it's not likely to happen for hundreds of years, I hope. But, as well as just not warming as much, then the currents in the Atlantic might be changed drastically as well by this ice melt, because you're dumping fresh water into the ocean as opposed to saltier water that's already there, and that affects the current as well.
Well, getting back to the North Pacific, many of my listeners are concerned about a couple of ocean changes that they see on the shoreline. We've got fishermen and surfers finding tropical species of fish further north than usual. And at the same time, I'm seeing more news reports of mass die-offs, everything from whales to starfish. Chris Bolton, is there anything strange happening in the North Pacific that you know about that could explain this?
So I wouldn't exactly say strange, but obviously the warmer temperatures are going to mean that fish they're going to be happier in a certain temperature for range, and that temperature range is going to be getting more poleward, so they're going to be migrating north, so they feel comfortable. I know that one of the mass die-offs was down to a disease. I think that killed lots of starfish, and it could be that the virus that did this could be cultivated better in these warmer temperatures in that position. So going off on a bit of a tangent, I know that there's a similar worry for crops that they grow in Africa, for example, that these sort of diseases could be cultivated in different temperatures and different places, and so that could be a similar thing happening in the North Pacific. So yeah, obviously if these sort of things happen, these diseases, then they're going to have a knock-on effect and cause other mass die outs as well, because there's a lack of food for other ecosystems. That's one explanation anyway.
Good enough. Well, touching on the tipping points that you raised earlier, I'm wondering if we experienced an abrupt ecosystem change in the ocean, as your paper describes, would we know what was happening during the event or only after the fact?
So what happens is you have these indexes like the PDO, for example, and because it varies quite a lot, you need to be sure that you're in that regime before you can say that you're in that regime. So you might have like an anomalous year, for example, that just drops you into the other regime, but then it will shift back like the year after. And so I think these type of regime shifts need to be established, and you need to make sure you're in them beforehand, before you start looking afterwards. So we probably only know about them after the fact. But also, if they're going to affect salmon productivity and things like that, then they're not going to happen instantly. You're going to have like the life cycle of the salmon before you know that you haven't had as high productivity. So that might take a couple of years to realize after that.
Well, it sort of worries me in your paper, because it seems to suggest everything may seem normal in the ocean for many years, and then rather quickly, and perhaps with little notice, the Pacific ecosystem could suffer a big change. Should we worry about this?
So I guess if you're a local fisherman, you might be worried about those sorts of things, because everything might be happy for a couple of years, and then suddenly you've got no fish. But I think from a more global sort of tipping point of view, then it's going to shift back eventually afterwards. So it's not something that's irreversible, and from a general viewpoint, you shouldn't worry that the climate's like been destroyed, if you want to call it that, because it will come back to the other phase eventually and then shift back again. It's just something that randomly switches backwards and forwards. So
would it do us any good to know that this shift is coming, or is the Pacific such a giant system there's not much we can do about it anyway?
So if we could predict it, it's always good, because in the best case scenario, if you wanted to keep the system in that regime, then you want to mitigate whatever's making it change. If you know about it beforehand and you can't do anything about it, you can at least prepare for it. So yeah, even if you can't do anything about it, you can prepare yourself for the change if you need to, if you know about it beforehand.
Well, you've talked about bigger events happening, but with less frequency, and I find an intriguing connection with another paper that I found. It was published in PNAS in 2008 by Vasilis Stakos et al., and the title says it, Slowing Down as an Early Warning Signal for Abrupt Climate Change. Would you agree there's a parallel between what you found in the North Pacific and the general idea that systems may slow down before they change in a big way?
Yeah, definitely. Our methods are actually based on the methods in this paper. I think my co-author Tim has done quite a lot of work with Vasilis and his team. So we kind of use similar signals. And in fact, when we were originally looking for this signal, we were trying to look for this tipping point behavior or this abrupt climate change that Vasilis talks about in our time series. So we were actually looking for a similar thing in the first place, but we can't actually give any evidence that a tipping point in the same sense is going to occur in the North Pacific, and it's more like you'll just get this oscillation that goes backwards and forwards. But the fact that we we use the same methods, yeah, there's definitely a parallel there.
It's kind of a scary idea for me, Chris, because, you know, humans, we take current conditions for granted. I don't check my wiring in my house or my plumbing. I just wait till something breaks, and then I think
I'll fix it,
you know. Nature could seem very stable just before it shifts into a different state.
Yeah, definitely. I mentioned earlier this AMOC collapse that might just happen suddenly and you'd have 10 degrees cooling in North Europe, supposedly. I mean, that's a huge change that would happen pretty abruptly compared to how stable it's been beforehand.
Well, you can come and stay at my house, Chris, if it gets
too
cold there.
Oh, thank you, yeah. It's quite cold there as well, right?
Well, not too bad, actually. I'm in the hottest part of Canada, practically. So what will you be working on next?
We've got a master's student who's been working with us, and they've been looking at the salmon time series, for example, whereas in our paper we've just made like simple toy models, if you want to call it, of ecosystems. And so working with them, it might be nice to try and make a connection between like actually modeling the salmon and seeing what effect our research would have on that. But otherwise I'm going to look a bit more into these early warning signals, so using the similar methods that we've been talking about here to try and predict tipping points in other systems.
We've been talking with Dr. Chris Bolton. He's a scientist with the College of Life and Environmental Sciences at the University of Exeter in England. Chris and Tim Lenton just published a paper titled Slowing Down of the North Pacific Climate Variability and Its Implications for Abrupt Ecosystem Change. Chris, thank you for this voyage into the inner workings of the North Pacific.
Thank you for having me. It's been good fun.
I'm Alex Smith, reporting for Radio EcoShock. You can find more links for this discussion in my weekly show blog, published every Wednesday at ecoshock.info.
Radio EcoShock. Check out the Radio EcoShock website. We're at ecoshock.org.